TalkZone.com.
Now, the Wild About Pets radio show, the place to learn something new about household pets and wild animals. Here's your host, educator and naturalist, Susan Frank.
Hello, welcome to Wild About Pets. This is the place we talk in depth to leading authors and experts about household pets or wild animals. To make your listening experience more enjoyable and meaningful, I have a companion website, wildaboutpets.net, that allows you to see photographs of the animals we will be talking about on the show today. To see these pictures while you are listening, just click the purple Look While You Listen button you see on the Talk Zone Wild About Pets homepage or on the exact episode page for today's show. As a pet owner, you no doubt are very used to taking your dog or cat to the vet. Sometimes in the middle of the night when your dog has suddenly been injured or your cat is sick. And it is a relief. And there is much your vet can do to help trauma, prescribe drugs, and perform surgeries. Along with your vet, however, there is much more that you can be aware of and do to provide better companionship, healing, nutrition, and lifelong care for your dog or cat. But how, you might ask? There is a guidebook that I'd like to tell you about today that offers clear explanations and instructions about everything from knowing what does constitute the best diet for your pet to advice for when your cat won't eat to having a reference to look up some of the diseases your pet may experience. This book gives us easy things to do at home as it is based on natural methods that are inherent and available to all of us as non-vets. The book's name is Dr. Pitcairn's Complete Guide to Natural Health for Dogs and Cats. And my guest today is Dr. Pitcairn himself. Best yet, he will describe the approach of veterinary medicine that he has practiced for over 20 years, homeopathy, which was a major departure from the conventional veterinary training he had had. And he will tell us why he switched and how this method is so beneficial. Welcome, Dr. Pitcairn. I am thrilled to have you on the show today.
Well, thank you, Susan. I felt so young when you said that because actually I've been practicing homeopathic medicine and nutrition for over 30 years.
Oops. Okay, I was looking at some of the timeline, you know, back to the 80s. Well, good. I'm glad you you changed that. Anyway,
that's
let me
okay. Give... Maybe we could back up a little, huh?
Let me give you a little bit more background here on your bio. Dr. Richard Pitcairn is recognized as the foremost veterinary homeopath in the United States. His best-selling complete Guide to Natural Health for Dogs and Cats, written with Susan Hubble Pitcairn in 1982, is in its third edition now. In 1986, he founded the Animal Natural Health Center, a clinical and teaching center for the understanding and use of homeopathic medicine in treatment of disease. I have some photos of the animals we'll be talking about today that Dr. Pitcairn very kindly contributed for the radio show. So if you'd like to see them while you are listening, click the purple Look While You Listen button that you see on the Talk Zone page. This will take you right to the photos that happen to be on my website, wildaboutpets.net, so you can look while you listen. Also, the phone lines are open today. It's February 5th, 2010. We are streaming live right now, and so if you'd like to join our conversation and ask Dr. Pitcairn a question, call 888-463-6748. Or you can also email me at susan@wildaboutpets.net. Again, it's February 5th, and the number to call is 888-GO-FOR-IT. Dr. Pitcairn, in your book, you wrote about the need for a new approach to pet health care. What is the change you have been advocating for so long?
Well, really two aspects to the book. There's a lot of emphasis, as you saw, on nutrition, on having proper diet, proper food. And the other part of it is using an alternative approach to treatment instead of the usual. A lot of people don't realize that the veterinary medicine that we're used to, that we're in our society, is just one form of medicine. It's called allopathic. And that's the one I was trained in, of course, as were all other veterinarians. However, it's not the only system of medicine out there. In fact, it's now that I've done other things, I see it's not particularly the best one. So the book is really talking about other approaches that could be used that are more successful, I think.
And you talk a lot about the natural or holistic treatment. And I think that we commonly have a misunderstanding, and you succinctly write about that also at one point, wanting to make clear what really holistic or natural treatment means. Can you go into a little bit of detail about that?
Sure, that's a good question. The word holistic, sometimes it's spelled with a capital H and sometimes it's a WH, like whole. It's come to not mean very much because a lot of people use it.
Yes.
And sometimes veterinarians that say they're holistic just mean they use some vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's good to try to define it more. So more specifically, what it means is it has a very much an important significance. Going back to what I said a moment ago about the system of medicine that we're more used to, which is the allopathic system, is based on reductionism. It's based on basically dividing the patient up into parts. And we're all familiar with that in the sense that for ourselves, if we go to a doctor, say, for example, if you can even find a general practitioner that looks at you as a patient, you could even find that kind of person. You go to a general practitioner and they say, well, I think there's something wrong with your reproductive tract, so you're going to see a gynecologist, or there's something wrong with your heart, so you're going to see a cardiologist, and so on. And so the patient has been divided up into different parts with different specialists. The holistic perspective has, in a sense, putting it in a nutshell, has taken a look at that and said, you know, that's not really the right way to understand the patient. There's only one patient, and when the patient is sick in their entire being, even though the focus of the disease may be here or there. If you're going to treat the patient successfully, you have to treat the whole patient. You can't treat its parts.
Makes total sense.
It really does. It's very intuitive. And when you hear that, you think, well, of course. But you know it's not of course in our system of medicine. That
right.
That's not the way they think.
Yes, and I think so many of us, when, as you mentioned, talking about humans, you know, I myself have had many experiences with my parents where, you know, we'd be in the hospital and that was exactly a frustration of how do you get everyone to talk to one another, and so all the parts are talking about the whole. And so if we find that frustrating for humans, of course that translates to our pets too.
Exactly. And it may not be quite as divided up in the veterinary fields in the sense that most veterinarians would be more like general practitioners, though there are veterinary specialists of various sorts, you know, here and there, but it's more so in the human side of things, of course, but still the same idea. It's still the veterinary. If you go to a conventional veterinarian, they're going to look, first of all, they're going to see if they can do some physical examination and laboratory tests. In other words, what's important to them is what they find as far as their tests of the blood and the urine and so on. They're not really looking at the whole patient in the sense we're talking about it. They're not looking, for example, at the behavior. They're not looking at some of the functional changes that occur. In fact, some of your listeners have probably had the experience that they'll start to tell their veterinarian about some of the things they've observed about their animal, the behavior, the way they act, some of the things they like and dislike. And the veterinarian obviously is tuning them out.
Mm-hmm.
That's not interesting to them. And so that's one of the differences. My experience has been with homeopathy, and of course that's one of the things in homeopathy we pay a lot of attention to. So there are those differences, you know, the attitude is, in other words, underlying attitude of different practitioners. One is looking at the patient in fragments, looking at only one part or a few parts that they think are important. The rest of it is insignificant. The other perspective is looking at the patient as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
That everything is connected. So let me take that one step further, Susan, so it makes it more clear to everybody.
Okay.
There is the, what I've been talking about up until now, of seeing the patient as a whole. But the holistic perspective, in addition to that, also considers their timeline. In other words, if you had a dog that was sick, say 2 years ago with something, maybe before that as a puppy had something else, if you brought that dog to me with some kind of an ongoing problem, I would consider the entire life experience of that dog is one problem. In other words, they're all different aspects of a disorder affecting the health of the dog. So even though it has a different diagnosis, it's really all the same disease, if you will.
Yes.
And so when I find a treatment or come up with a treatment program for that dog, I'm including everything that happened to them that I know about that you're able to tell me. Not just what you're presenting now, but what happened 2 years ago, what happened 5 years ago, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Yes, and in chapter 14, entitled Holistic and Alternative Therapies, Dr. Yu, on page 190, have a wonderful description of an animal like a dog that you give like a little analogy of Jesse. And you explain, and this is perfect because anyone who has a pet could kind of, you know, relate to this, how you explain a story of where Jesse started exhibiting certain problems and symptoms, but they all connected and they all linked back, and how one thing actually exasperated another condition. And so in your book, you make it, you go into a lot of detail with, which I think is really great, and you make it very clear how mm-hmm. this actually works on a practical basis.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, that's a good description. The problem that I face and others that do the kind of work I'm talking about, again, my experience is primarily with homeopathy, but, you know, would include other alternative approaches too, like Chinese medicine, acupuncture, herbal medicine, and so on. But I'm speaking more about what I know about homeopathy. And so when we have a patient brought to us, like you're describing, like Jesse in the book, we have to look at all of that. And not only that, as I said before, you know, what happened, what other illnesses, what other health problems were there prior to this visit, but what kind of treatments were done?
Mm-hmm.
Because so often the treatments that we are familiar with that are used in veterinary medicine are treatments that actually don't restore their health. They simply make the symptoms go away. And, for example, most people are familiar with how often some kind of steroid is used, Pred or dexamethasone or something. And I would say that probably it's rare, it seems like, that any animal goes in for treatment that doesn't get one of those. Well, people have to realize that those are, like prednisone, you know what I mean by that, right? Pred and dexamethasone and so on, those steroids.
I'm familiar with prednisone. Yes, I know actually quite a few people have been on that, and also animals.
Yeah, it's a commonly used one, but there's a class of, they're all kind of the same. But let's say Pred is an example.
Okay.
It's a very powerful hormone, and it's modeled on an actual natural hormone that's produced by the adrenal glands. Adrenal glands are little glands by the kidneys in the body that produce hormones that regulate different things. Well, the adrenal glands have a particularly important function in the body. That has to do with regulating inflammation. You know, when there's inflammation and redness, soreness, pain, fever, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually regulated. The body has the ability to regulate it, and it actually uses inflammation so that it can recover from injuries and illness. So, like, if you get sick, now you can imagine, for example, let's say you got flu or something, and you didn't have any reaction to it. You just got sick and died, right?
Right.
In other words, if you develop no symptoms, you don't develop any defenses.
Right.
Symptoms
are good things.
So the inflammation in the body actually serves a purpose, and it has to do with recovery from disease. Well, there is a natural hormone called cortisol that's released by the adrenal glands that helps to regulate how severe the inflammation is. In other words, the body is healing itself through inflammation, but it's a controlled process.
Mm-hmm.
The steroids, then, once that was discovered, once cortisol was discovered and recognized, then a number of synthetic ones were made in the laboratory. And Pred is one of those examples. It's about 10 or 20 times more powerful than the natural hormone. So what happens when that's used is, because it's so highly unnatural and it's so powerful, it basically shuts down the immune system. So you take your dog in and it's itching or whatever, and it gets a shot of Pred. It shuts everything down. It makes all the white cells decrease. It makes the adrenal glands stop producing cortisol and so on. And then the dog looks better. He stops having symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
The reason he doesn't have symptoms anymore is because of the drug. He hasn't stopped having symptoms because he's healthy. He stopped having symptoms because the drug was given.
Got it.
And it shut down his immune system.
Exactly.
Well, then, of course, without an immune system, he's more susceptible to other diseases, et cetera, et cetera. You know, just like Jesse.
Yes, yes.
So it builds from one thing to the next.
So let's go into what the alternative is, and let's first define what homeopathy, and I'm saying it correctly because I wasn't before. We've been using that word. Let's talk about what that is.
You can't get homeopathic treatment unless you can pronounce it.
Okay. So now that I want to go get some, I better do this by the end of this interview. And by the way, anyone who wants to see some photographs, because we're going to start moving through them, just click that purple Look While You Listen button on the Talk Zone page, and that'll take you to them. We're looking at an example of some of the tools used in homeopathic medicine. Is that okay in that usage of it?
Well, it gives the impression that it's something more herbal than it really is.
Okay, well, tell us, what is a homeopathic medicine?
Well, you know, let me first say, so you understand a little bit more about the word.
Okay.
Because we know the word homeo, you know, that sounds like homosexual, right?
Right.
The word comes from, I guess it must be Greek, or I guess it must be Greek or Latin, doesn't matter. But anyway, it means the same. That's what homo means, the same. So, you know, homosexual, someone who loves someone of the same sex.
Mm-hmm.
Well, homeopathy means, it has the same meaning. And let me explain a little bit about, first of all, how that works, and then you'll see where the name comes from.
Okay.
So homeopathy started about over 200 years ago in an area that's now we would call Germany. And it was started by a medical doctor, Dr. Hahnemann was his name, Samuel Hahnemann. And he was struggling with the same issue that we've been talking about, is like, how can you use medicines to help the patient restore their health? He found through his investigations that if you can use a substance, he just discovered this, that if you use a substance that will create the same kind of symptoms the patient has, it acts like a stimulus to their immune system, if you will, to actually make them work harder to get well. It acts like a stimulus, you see?
Mm-hmm.
So a simple example would be, let's say you had a problem with, you had food sensitivity. You eat strawberries, you break out in hives, let's say, on your skin. You know what hives are, right?
Sure.
So let's say that happens. We could use a homeopathic med. We wouldn't use the same thing. We wouldn't use strawberry, but we'd use something that causes the same kind of a symptom. So say, for example, we might use bee venom. It would be used in extremely dilute quantities, the way it's prepared. But we know that a bee sting causes hives to form, big bumps that are itchy and red and so on. So if you had a reaction like that to a food, then we could use the bee venom as a homeopathic remedy, which produces the same kind of symptoms. And when we would give that to you, then your body would respond by basically doing a more effective job of recovering from the problem. So, and the use of the medicine like that, it's in homeopathy, it's called using a similar medicine, meaning the medicine is similar in its effect to the disease that was there in the patient.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense so far? Am I going too fast?
No, that's fine. But, you know, this does bring one thought to mind, Dr. Pitcairn. How is this different from vaccinations? And I know we're going to get into, because I'll ask you about your, you know, discussion of vaccinations, because I know you have some opinions about that. But my understanding, and maybe other people's generic understanding, is a vaccination is also to, you know, put in a little bit of whatever the disease is to build immunity. How is this different?
Well, it's different in two aspects. First of all, let me just underline the fact that in homeopathy it was found that we could use a substance that produced similar symptoms. However, you don't use the substance that caused it.
Okay.
Makes it worse. You use a substance that is similar in its effect. That's important. It has to be similar but not the same.
Okay, that's the key. Similar but not the same.
Exactly.
Right.
Because if you can use something that's the same, like for instance the example I gave you, we can make a remedy out of strawberries and give it to you. And it may have some effect, but just as often it makes it worse.
Okay, sure.
So when we go to vaccines, what you're doing is, let's say that the vaccine is against, distemper in dogs or something. We're taking the actual virus that causes the disease and modifying it or growing in a tissue culture in the laboratory or in eggs or something like that and injecting it into the dog. And that, in a sense, is giving them the distemper disease, but it's supposedly in a mild form. That's the idea. It's a mild form rather than a severe form. So right away you can see one that you can follow from that to realize that it's very possible the disease isn't mild. They get quite sick from it. It can happen depending on their susceptibility, right?
Yes.
The idea is that it's mild. But some vaccines and their effects aren't always mild. That's the problem. One of the problems that's occurred with the vaccine.
Yes.
Anyway, back to your question, you know, in homeopathy, we're using a similar substance, not the same. In vaccination, you're using the disease itself.
Okay.
You see that?
Yes, good distinction. And, you know, when we come back, because we're going to take a short break, we'll talk about some actual examples and look at some photographs of cases of the homeopathy and how you treated them. So stay tuned.